Thank you so much, Graham, and thank you for staying. I think it's raining too hard to escape, so we'll just do another session after this. But yeah, it's wonderful to be back with you. And I was just thinking in the break that it's just encouraging and maybe a good thing to launch from is that the world has changed, but the human condition remains the same. So we talk about teenagers of today, but teenagers are teenagers are teenagers are teenagers. They just have a different context in which they're outworking their needs, their phases of their life, all of those things. And I read such a lovely thing the other day that said, teenagers are not addicted to their phones, they're addicted to each other. And I don't know about you, but I was addicted to my friends when I was a teenager too. But for me, it was lying on the dining room floor with the phone, talking rubbish. Or my best friend and I used to write letters to each other. Like we saw each other all day at school. And then I'd go home and I'd write her a letter. And then at one stage we had a book. And we would write to each other. And then we'd take turns taking the book home and write to each other. And so, you know, young people and teenagers, it's because of the increase of oxytocin in their systems when they, from about 12 onwards, is their relationships are super important to them. And connecting is really, really important to them. And so for our teenagers, obviously, and our young people, I keep saying teenagers, but obviously any of our young children who have devices, is they just have this added complexity that devices bring. And it's a lot easier, you know, a lot of people my age go, I'm so grateful I did my dumb stuff before the internet. Because we all made mistakes, we all did silly things, we were all mean to other people. It's just a different context and sometimes a little bit more complex. So they're growing up in this complicated space, but there is so much we can do about it. And I'm going to start at the very basics and move on. And the first thing I just want to encourage all of us to do is that every single device in our home should have some kind of monitoring and filtering software on it. This is kind of if you put your child in a car and you're going to drive somewhere, what is the first thing you do? You make sure their seatbelt is on. This is the same thing. You handing a child a device that has absolute access to the internet is actually like handing them the keys to a Ferrari and saying to them, don't go in any bad places, drive well, but without any driving lessons, without any instructions, often way before it's even legal for them to have that app or to be on that space. And so this is a really great thing to have, is some kind of monitoring and filtering software. There are many out there. I'll recommend a couple at the end. It doesn't, as long as you have one that works for your family, it doesn't really matter what kind you use. But I'll actually encourage whole families to have this, because it also, you know, we're also prone to addictions. We're also prone to getting sucked into the wrong spaces on the internet. And these things can do all sorts of different functions. They can limit the time we spend on certain apps. They can block certain apps. You know, some of them like Bark and Safe Surfer, if you have an Android phone, is literally they access your screen and they blur any kind of nudity that comes onto your device. So there's some amazing things that they can do. They also can alert you to things. Bark has some amazing capabilities as well. That's one of the apps that they use. They've developed these incredible algorithms that they know the red flag words. Of teenage conversations, red flag words around self-harm, depression, anxiety, suicide, sex, all of those things that can be potential dangers for our children, they flag those kinds of words if they're used repeatedly for parents. So there's just brilliant stuff we can use. But obviously alone this does not work, because your child, you can have all of the most wonderful software on your Wi-Fi, on your devices, and then you live in a housing estate and your child goes next door. Or your child goes on the bus to school. Or they're sitting next to the hockey field. And I shared that story this morning, but my son, he was next to the hockey field at the school where they go. And they're a phone-free school, which means no phones from the time lessons start until the end of the school day. I really encourage parents to advocate for this. I teach in a school that used to have phones and now has a no phone policy. It literally changed the school. You know, before when the boys were allowed phones, it was like this before, on the way to class, you'd have all of these boys on their phones and then they'd be sitting at break all around on their phones. You'd walk into a class to, I was doing a healthy sexuality program in the school. I'd walk in and it'd be quiet and orderly because everyone's sitting on their phones. And then you say, boys, put your phones away. And then they have to put their phones away. But then during the lesson, you're like, my boy, remember, no phones. You're confiscating a phone. Oh, and then in consultation with me and a few other people, the principal took the brave move of making it a phone-free school. And honestly, there were not many parents who were upset about it. They actually realized the benefit of their teenage boys having 8 hours in the day or 6 hours in the day where they were disconnected from their devices. And the it is much more boisterous. There's much more like bumping in the corridors. We have to, you know, there's ball games. We had to ban gambling. They were playing Uno for money. But these are the problems we'd rather have, right? At their school, they get their phones back at the end of the day, and they were waiting for hockey, and this boy, there was a bunch of them sitting around. One boy had his phone, took it out and said, look at my cats, look at my dog, look at my girlfriend. And it was a full frontal nude of a 13-year-old girl that he then showed to all the boys in the hockey team. So obviously I can educate my own children. I can have stuff on their phones. They don't take their phones to school. I can have all of these things. But next to the hockey field, they're exposed to something. So monitoring, filtering software, a must. Something that I encourage you to talk to your children about rather than they just pick up their iPad one day and all their favorite games have disappeared because you've decided to put software on it and blocking all their games. Do it together. Talk about what is age appropriate. Talk about what they really love to do. And then set up the apps. Obviously, you have the passwords. You have the power. You have the control. But you set it up together. It's important, yeah. So just a story in terms of this is I read a story the other day of a mom who she had the filtering software, the monitoring software on her devices. But obviously, they can play all sorts of games. There's content on all sorts of apps that they can access. And she was alerted to nudity on her daughter's device. And she went and had a look. And what had happened is her son and daughter loved Roblox. And we're obsessed with the game, and obviously when you're obsessed with the game, you're then also obsessed with getting the currency for the game, because most games have currency, and it's called Robux in Roblox. And someone had befriended these children, pretending to be another child, and kind of groomed them to the point of saying that he would give them this huge amount of Robux if these children sent him nudes of themselves. And they were 11 and 13, these children, and they did. And that's when the mom got alerted to it and obviously was able to intervene. And obviously you don't want to get even to that point, but without the software, how long could that have carried on? What could have happened? That kind of thing. So it is really, really helpful. So software and then proximity and presence. Like I said earlier, for a lot of people, when they are handed a device, a child is handed a device, they go through a room, close the door behind them. A little while ago, I was at the same school where I'm doing work, and I was sitting at the tuck shop doing some stuff on my laptop, and this one grade 11 boy came up to me and he said, ma'am, why are you so obsessed with like phones being safe and you know, talking to people about phones and things? And I said to him, well, honestly, my boy, like for boys, one of my main concerns is pornography and your access to pornography and what that's going to do to your brain and to your body and to your relationships. And he sat there and he was like, you know, ma'am, I got my phone in grade 6 and I watched so much pornography, the whole of grade 6 and grade 7. And then he was like, you know, that was really not good for me. But his mom had handed him a phone and done nothing else. And he had sat in his room with his phone where he was able to plug it in at night, have access to it all night. And he stumbled upon something that awakened something in his teenage body, which is completely normal. But because there was no education, intervention, parental presence, he got sucked into that and he consumed it for 2 years. And imagine what that does to a 10, 11, 12-year-old, 13-year-old brain over that period of time. So be online with your children. Know what games they like. Know what they enjoy watching. You're not just wanting to be the police in this. You want to be the interested parent. I sit and watch YouTube with my boys sometimes. I'm not always that interested in it. But I ask questions. My son is into bonsais. So sometimes it is bonsais of old Japanese guys trimming trees. and I ask them to explain to me what's happening in this video. And then other times, it's one of their favorites. Used to be something called How Ridiculous, and it lives up to its name. It's a group of grown men who do ridiculous things. One of the ones I watched with them the other day was they took a helicopter and they took the blades off and replaced it with baseball bats and then threw stuff at it to see what would go the furthest. And this is where you know like how stuff can suck you in. I was completely hooked to this thing. And we were like, no, it's going to be this. It's going to be the watermelon. No, it's going to be the bouncy ball. And it's so be interested in what they're interested in. If they're gaming, play a couple of rounds with them. You know, just get interested. Know what they like, what they enjoy, what are the challenges, what are the things they wish you would let them play. Every home should have an open phone policy. It should be standard in homes. And this, if you start this young, it's really hard to start this with a 16-year-old. Just saying. But you start it the first time you hand a device to a child, it becomes the culture in your home. We don't even talk about it in our home. I have all of my children's passwords. I don't sneak at night and unplug their phone and scroll around it. They know I can pick up their phone at any point. And it's a lovely speed bump for a child to know that your mom could be on your phone at any moment. That presence is a guiding presence. It's the presence that's supposed to be their prefrontal cortex until theirs kicks in. And so I always believe that everybody should have somebody that can pick up their phone anytime. So if you're married, your spouse should be able to do that. If you have a serious dating relationship, perhaps it's your partner. I don't know where that line is. But if you're single, possibly it's a good friend who will call you out if you're doing dumb stuff on your phone. Because accountability is a very powerful thing. And a lack of accountability, especially in a young child. You know, I was listening to a psychologist who was saying there is an increase in narcissism, malevolence, and psychopathy in humanity, so people who are egotistical, narcissistic, malevolent, so just evil and mean, and psychopathic, is increasing in humanity because of the online space and the anonymity and the lack of accountability it provides for people. And so we want to be around to see what our children are doing. Are they making narcissistic comments? Are they being kind? So we involved in those spaces. And obviously, it does provide, and I know this, being a parent of teenagers, wonderful coaching opportunities. And we've got to be careful how we navigate that. You know, I have very clear ground rules. My boys have just got phones halfway through. Well, they've got them in grade 8. They only have WhatsApp, so it's just a case of checking that every now and again. But with my daughter, we have very clear boundaries around this. So I'm not allowed to scroll through her Instagram stories until she has. I'm not allowed to scroll through her Instagram until she has, because it's just, I mean, imagine going on your Instagram and you've got none of your stuff because your mom's already looked at it and it's disappeared off your newsfeed. I mean, that's not cool. So we just, and I only really click on things. And honestly, the two places I spend the most time, and as my daughter's got older, I spend less and less time, is I keep an eye on her For You page. And most apps have a For You page. And Instagram, it's if you want to search for something, and then all those pictures come up and all those options. So if your child is looking at stuff that's dangerous or inappropriate, it's going to recommend more of that stuff to them. But if you go on there and it's cute cat videos and cooking, she's probably okay. And then also the DMs are a good place to keep an eye on, is the direct messages. Again, I don't click on her messages unless there's a bit of a red flag for me, or if it's a person, a request that's come from someone who she doesn't know. Sometimes I'll click on those. But we've just got to do it respectfully with our children, because it is their social media. It is their space that they're interacting with their people. And maybe a friend is having a conversation with them, and so you're not going to reply ever on anything. Unless it sounds like someone who's stalking your child, and then reply away. get creative and then block them. So we've just got to just make sure we stay present. They know we're paying attention. It's really helpful for our children to know that we're around and we're paying attention to what is going on. And that we go on and understand the apps that they're using. I hate Snapchat, but I do have Snapchat and I use it from time to time to keep up to date. Snapchat has an AI. Have you guys seen it? So now they don't even have to talk to actual people. They can talk to their AI about stuff if they don't have people who are replying. So presence and proximity, really, really important. And then this has been one of the most important things for me, is that my home is a safe place for conversations for my children. So if they have questions, and this is not the chat 101, we maybe do it another day, but when I give that talk to parents, I say, establish yourself as the trusted expert in sexual things. So if your children have a question about sex, they don't think about Siri, they think about you. That answer every question your child asks you. Never pull the go ask your father. It's usually the other way around, but I'm just sticking up for the dads today. And never go, I'll tell you later, and then never tell them. Because they're curious and they want to know. And if you don't tell them, Siri's very happy to tell them. And what she tells them is probably not going to align with your worldviews and a safe, healthy option of what they need to know. So answer all of their questions. Talk to them about devices. Talk to them about addiction. Talk to them about what is the difference between using your device and being controlled by your device. Do you feel like you have too much time, too little time? Talk about the big issues. I've already encouraged you guys, but if your children are online, talk to them about sex. Because there's something called the law of first mention, which basically means that the first time you're exposed to something becomes your grid. And like I said this morning, sex is great. Sex is a wonderful gift to us, for humanity, for the strengthening of marriages, and actually quite a lot of fun in a correct context. But so if our children know that and they have a vision for their sexual future, when they come across the distorted version, they are much better armed. When Blake saw that picture next to the hockey field, he got in the car, he told his sister, I got in the car, he told me, we navigated it with the school, and I told some of the other moms that I knew so that they could also navigate it with their sons. And then he said this thing to me that I'll never forget. He said, Mom, I was shocked, but I was not surprised. It's a big difference between shocked and surprised. Surprised is deer in the headlights, don't know what to do because I don't know what this is. So he was shocked by it because it was an image that was shocking. There's a good chance that part of him enjoyed the image because he's a teenage boy. And I always say to my children, and I would encourage you to say the same to yours, is that that's not shameful, the fact that your body responded to that, because you are created for sexual intimacy. And so your body is doing that involuntarily, but what you do after that matters. And when you talk to your children about sex, when you talk to them about pornography and about nudes and about gender and about all of those things, then when they come across them online, they're equipped to navigate it in a healthy way. And they are much better positioned to make educated, good, future-focused decisions. Talk to them about what to do when they're exposed to things. Like with Blake and with little kids, what is really, really helpful is to even role play with them. So give them a phone, say to them, I want you to imagine you see something on the screen that gives you a fright, that shocks you or gives you that weird feeling in your tummy when you know something's not right. So you help them do that. And then my thing with children is always, shut it down, walk away, tell a trusted adult. So that's kind of a mantra that I've told my kids, and I want it to be until they are teenagers. And a little while ago, this actually happened with one of my sons, is he was watching YouTube Shorts, and they were interviewing the most pierced person in the world. And he had all of these piercings, So I was working at my table, at the dining room table, and he came and he was like hovering. You know, sometimes your kids just hover for a bit. And I said to my boy, "What? Are you okay?" And he's like, "No, I'm fine, I'm fine." And then after a while, he's like, "No, actually, can I tell you something?" And he had seen this thing, and then in this interview, they had asked about the different piercings and the different places, and they'd mentioned this word of a specific kind of piercing that he'd never heard of before. So he did what his mother told him never to do, and he Googled it. And some images came up that shocked him, and he got a fright, and he did what I had encouraged him to do, put it down, walk away, tell a trusted adult. Because when our children are exposed to stuff online, sometimes if they don't respond quickly, they can get sucked into it. And sometimes it's sucked in because it's quite alluring, it's quite enticing, it's quite nice to look at. But also sometimes there's that voice in their head that goes, you're going to get into so much trouble. Or you are disgusting for looking at this. And that shame sets in. And shame is the big disconnector, right? It's the debilitating human emotion. And so often out of shame, they'll get stuck there. And so I always say to kids, quickly, just put it down, walk away, tell a trusted adult. Actually, so tell them to run away. And so encourage them, talk to them about that, model it with little kids, role play it with little kids so that when they do come across it, they know what to do. And talk to them about their integrity and their authenticity. And then I encourage my children in our conversations to blame me for their good behavior if they need to. You know, oh, my mom checks my phone. I'm not going to click on that. My mom, you know, she's a bit over the top. And, you know, whatever. You can say what you want about me. If you need to use me as your excuse, that's okay. And then talk to them about good things about social media. We don't always want to police and talk about the bad things. Talk about some of the stuff that they love, some of the things you love, point out what you like. But then also have big questions about self-worth and about, from time to time, my daughter and I will look at her social media and we'll discuss the posts. I remember a little while ago, one of my classic pet hate posts of teenage girls is the one with the bikini that's the same size at the front and the back, and they're generally in like an outside shower in their like tiny bikini. And I mean, I would be rich if I had R1 for every one of those I've seen on my daughter's Instagram. And then, so we talk about it. And without shaming, we're all about body positivity and all of those things. But we talk about, okay, well, why do you think she's posting this? What do you think is the reaction she wants out of this post? What is there maybe a need that she's trying to fulfill from putting this out there? Or do you think it's okay? Because I love listening to teenagers and going, well, and then you go and you say, well, is it okay for the boys to post that gym selfie, you know, with the six-pack and the pants that are just like here, and they're like in the mirror, you can't see their face, you know, and is that okay? Is it okay for boys? Is it okay for girls? Why is that guy, is he posting it because he's encouraging health and strength and whatever, or is he doing something else? You know, and so there's some really great conversations to be had, but we've got to try and come in with a non-judgmental approach and a conversational approach, but also obviously feed truth and life into our children. And then also just make sure that you know how to respond when your child comes to you with these kinds of things. Because most teenagers tell me they would never tell their parents if they came across something on their phones. Because their parents would just take their phones away. And that phone is their lifeline to their friends. It's their connection to their community. And so they basically, a lot of teenagers say, my parents are completely unreasonable about phones. And this one guy said to me, my mom blames everything on the Wi-Fi. He says she doesn't even know what social media is. So for her, everything is the Wi-Fi. He said, the other day I dropped a plate in the kitchen and she blamed the Wi-Fi. I said, yeah, but were you on your phone while you were carrying your plate? That's probably why. So we've got to choose our battles and choose how we respond when our children come to us. I do believe there is a time and place for taking devices away, but it's generally when there's an addiction, when there's something dangerous, criminal, or very, very unhealthy happening in a child's life. But I do believe that that's the last resort, because when we are blaming the phone, we're not looking at the issue. We're not looking at what is going on in this child's life, what is happening, and what are some of the ways that we can raise them to be healthier. And then the next thing is boundaries and behaviors. I think it's important for us to be very practical with our children. We are the parent. The phone belongs to us. It is up to us to put healthy boundaries in place in our children's lives. Limit the amount of time your children spend on devices. If you spend long periods of time, you're getting down rabbit holes, you are wiring your brain in healthy ways, but when children have a healthy amount of screen time in a day, it's teaching them good habits for life. In our home, I don't know about your homes, but our homes are very busy. There's never more than 30 minutes in a weekday for devices. When they have phones, it's a little bit more, but limit how much time, and then have boundaries. So some of the boundaries in our homes is no phones before school, no screens before school, because it really does set their brains up badly for the school day when the first thing they do is absorbing social media content. With my daughter, my boys don't really care about their phones, but my daughter, if she is ready for school, she's not allowed to go on her phone while she's eating breakfast. She's not allowed to be on her phone while she's getting ready for school. But if she's ready and she's waiting at the door for us to go, she can check her messages, she can check her phone. But no social media, the comparative social media I'm talking about, like the Instagrams, for my boys, they don't really got it. But so have those kinds of boundaries. For us in the holidays, there's no screens before 4 o'clock. That's just our rule. I do highly recommend in the holidays no screens in the first thing in the morning. It sets the tone for the day. That's how you start your day. But when you go, okay, screens are going to happen, but they're going to happen later, you refocus your brain on other things. Because, there's a saying that I read recently that said, my worry is that with phones and social media, we are raising a generation of musicians who will never pick up their dad's guitar and start strumming, chefs who will never make a mess of the kitchen, and artists who will never doodle. And so when we just fill boredom and freeze time with devices, we rob our children of the gift of boredom and creativity. And never mind connection and all of those amazing things. But I think it's only something like 3% of children actually create any content on social media. Most of our children are just absorbing content. And so make decisions in your home so that there's lots of space for your children to get bored and get creative. My children learned this quite quickly, is other than when we had decided on times for screens, if they came to me and said they're bored, I would generally say, congratulations. Or, I'm not your circus monkey. It's not my job. I have a very long job description as your mom. Circus monkey ain't on there. I'm not your entertainment. Go and find something to do. And generally, it doesn't take more than 20 minutes. But you got to push through that whining. And that you're so unreasonable, and everyone else is on FIFA, and all of that, and let them get creative. And so then also decide on times when you are going to allow screen time. For us, we have times where you've done your homework, you've packed your hockey stuff for the next day, you're ready. Okay, cool. Go watch. Our line, I think every home has a line. Ours is, Mom, can I watch? Can I watch? And so I was like, yeah, okay, go and watch and have some time. And then also have rules around apps. A very good rule is your children don't download apps without your permission. You can set this up so easily if you have, about Android, but on Apple, everyone's requests come to me. I hop onto commonsensemedia.org. I check out the app where you can see recommendations from children, from parents, and from experts. And then I make an educated decision about the app that my children want. And then have very strict and closely guarded spaces where no devices are allowed. I recommend never having devices at the dinner table. We have this rule, and sometimes it's really hard because you're sitting around the dinner table and you're chatting and you're like, oh my gosh, I saw something amazing today. Let me show. No. You can't. You have no phones. You can do it afterwards because once that phone's on the table, it's a slippery slope. No work emails, nothing at the table. Phone-free zone. Make your car a phone-free zone. Don't let your kids put their earphones and go on their devices on the way to school. That is sacred time. You literally have your children captive. You know, I love the car for awkward conversations because no one has to look at each other. But now I've honed my strategy that what I do is I wait till I'm 2 to 3 minutes away from home, especially with my boys. My daughter's a bit way less awkward about things. But I wait till a few minutes before home, and then I bring up the topic. And then the boys are much more open to talk to me, number one, because they don't have to look at me, but number two, because they know this is going to be over in 3 minutes. So I can actually engage with those 3 minutes, and then I can jump out the car and go and play basketball and get over whatever my mother's just told me. But yeah, so set boundaries, talk about, and then set up apps. When you do allow your children to have apps, set up those apps with your children. Most apps, TikTok.com, Instagram.com, they have great guidelines about how to set up these apps to keep your children safer. Obviously, private accounts only make your children invisible. They don't make them blind. So private accounts obviously are a no-brainer, but they still see everything. It's just that people can't see them, which is quite a good thing, but it's not what we think it is. Know all the passwords, disable and restrict potentially dangerous apps and platforms. Keep track of devices. We have a charging station in our kitchen, and it has worked so well. It's one of those skinny shelf things that you file papers on a desk. I'm sure you've seen them, and they're beautiful for iPads and phones. And then we just have one of those multi-plug things, and that's where we plug our things in. And the devices live there. That's their home. And then the device goes on holiday to go and be used by a child. And then when they finish, and we go, okay, time's up, or the screen time's over, they just walk back there and put it back because it's always what we've done. And so have a place where all your devices live. The phones live there. The iPads live there. And before bed, about at least 30 minutes before bed, all devices should go back to home base. Except if you, like us, what we do is my husband has a phone for safety and emergencies in our bedroom. He has his phone next to his bed. Everyone else's, including mine, live in the kitchen. This is a great rule to have for your children. If they need to wake up in the morning, buy them, if you have the means, a smartwatch, or like something that has an alarm on it, or go old school, you can still buy alarm clocks, or just do what I did, and I go, it's time to wake up! Like that's my children's alarm clock, or like I pull their leg or something. They do not need their phones, and this is like the classic excuse from teenagers, yeah, but I need my alarm clock. No, you don't. You have a mother. They don't wake you up. Or get an alarm clock. But get devices out of our children's bedrooms. And honestly, I think we cut down a lot of stuff by this. They're going to sleep better. And then create lots of face-to-face time for your children, especially those who have phones, phone-free time. Get them to volunteer, be part of youth groups, play sport, family outings. All of these significantly lower their likelihood of getting addicted to screens. Also talk about appropriacy of how they behave online. Talk to them about what you expect from them, that they must be nothing less than an upright, wonderful, kind digital citizen. And that is your expectation always for them, and consequences if that doesn't happen. And then remind them, I love this quote that I read, said, dance like no one's watching, but text like the world will read it. So just make them aware, you know, with their boundaries that they are aware of those things and that they're following that. And then empower them to leave, block, and unfollow. You know, I mean, I don't know about you, but leaving a WhatsApp group is like one of my favorite things. Empower them. Just go, Emily has left the group. You know, it's like a bit of a mic drop moment. So empower them. Like, if there's anything dodgy going on, just leave. Just get up and leave, physically or digitally. Don't linger in spaces where things are going south. Remove yourself and empower them to do that. Because often, when they have the courage to do it, there's a lot of people who will follow them. I had this once on a swim group that I belonged to because I do open water swimming. And I mean, honestly, this group was like, who's swimming today? What's the ocean like? Thumbs up, thumbs down. The average age was like 40, so it was very little traffic on this group. And then one day I was driving back from the South Coast and my kids were in the car. My daughter had my phone because I don't know about you guys, but my kids love to look at photos on my phone. like so boring, but they love that. It's usually like screenshots of something I've seen on Takealot or something. But anyway, she was looking at my photos, and then I was like, okay, put my phone down. And then we came up the off-ramp to the traffic light, and I looked down, and there were like 40 or no, I think it was like 27 messages on my swim group. And for a group where the average age is 40, is like the swim group is like lit, you know? When my daughter went to grade 8 at a new school, she joined a grade 8 group, and she woke up in the morning and said 999 plus messages. That's as far as apparently as Instagram can, I mean, but anyway, this was 27, and it was something's going down on the swim group. So I opened the swim group, and I got smacked in the face with porn. Flicked it off my screen, and the guy who'd posted it went, oops, wrong group. Okay, so now I have a few emotions running through my system. One is, my daughter almost saw that. And the second one was, a respectable father, community man, businessman from my community has a group for this. I was like, so grateful that I had to drive to my house before I responded. So I drove home and I said, guys, love swimming with you, but I know too much about porn and what it's doing to individuals and to families to expose myself or my children to this. I'll keep in touch in other ways. Christy has left the group. And what happened after that is a couple of the guys on the group messaged me to apologize, but also the group just fell apart because one person had the courage to leave. And so I want my kids to be that one person who goes, uh-uh, this is not for me. I've got better plans for my life than this. So encourage them to do that. And then also, just in terms of boundaries and behaviors, is I do encourage you to put on the brakes. Our culture is putting so much pressure on us as parents to give devices and social media to our kids. And honestly, if we are honest, some of the time is the parents wanting to keep track of the child. In a world that we feel is so dangerous, a lot of the parents of the children, of my children's peers, sorry, I'm getting a bit tongue-tied, their parents have apps on their phones to track them. Now, I don't know, but tracking humans, it's just not my thing. And if my child is not somewhere with an adult I trust, they're not going to be there. I don't need a phone with a tracking device or a smart watch with a tracking device. They're not on house arrest. They're not a prisoner, you know? And so I'm more about encouraging healthy behavior, you know, raising them to be sensible and make good decisions. Because if we normalize tracking, it gets a little bit crazy. I mean, I had a friend whose daughter was 21 and she was going to a concert in Joburg, and she literally tracked her along the N2. And then the tracking thing would stop and she'd phone her and go, are you okay? You've broken down. She goes, Mom, we're getting a coffee. Like, calm down. But we kind of, so anyway, a lot of the time it's the parents who are parenting out of fear who give their kids the device in the first place. So I'm saying put on the brakes. My encouragement, and there's no judgment, we're all going to make our own decision, is that children in primary school do not need phones, and they most definitely do not need social media. They don't have a need for it. They may have a want for it, but they do not have a need for it. And the tiny bit of social cred that offers your child, for me, is not worth the huge amount of stuff that will influence your child, the stuff that will happen to your child once they have that phone. I speak to teenager after teenager after teenager who say to me, I wish my parents had not given me a phone when I was so young. There's so much stuff I will never be able to unsee. And there was so much stupid stuff I did because I was not ready for that responsibility. And so, whatever age, doesn't matter, but just don't feel pressured into it is what I'm saying. Make the choice that's right for your family and your child and their level of responsibility. And then if you do give your child a device, my encouragement is that you give them graded, ongoing exposure and freedom on that device. So just, I'll use my family as an example because it is my example, is our children got phones, they had to get iPads for school in grade 6 and 7, but only had Google Classroom, textbooks, and iMessage. When Emily went to high school, she got a phone, and then 6 months into high school, she got Instagram. Because that transition period is tricky when kids start a new phase of life. They can do silly things to become popular, and so giving them social media then isn't always the best time. So then we set it up together. And when our children get one app at a time, they get to get to know how to use that app well. They get to show you how responsible they are on that app. And then as they show themselves to be more responsible, more mature, not only in their social media life, but in their whole life, when you see them growing and maturing, you can then add to that. So then halfway through grade 9, Emily got Snapchat. So now she has Snapchat and Instagram. She's in grade 10 now. And then she's got Pinterest, and she's got a couple of other things. But graded. And then obviously giving them more and more freedom, because this starts out as our responsibility, but you want definitely by the time they leave for varsity for it to be fully their responsibility. So it's not about micromanaging your child for their whole life. It's about having very tight control, very strong boundaries that you enforce when they're young, so that they internalize healthy boundaries that they then live by as they get older, and then they can then take those values, those boundaries into their own adulthood. And then the next thing, and we're almost there, is connection and values. And for me, this has been the biggest weapon that I fight with my own family, is that we raise children who know who they are, who have strong identities as who they created to be by God, and that, you know, it's so interesting. I was speaking at a conference recently at it was called the International Boys Schools Conference. It was all the big boys schools, the Sachs and the Rondebosch and the Paul Jim and all of those, and then all of our Durban ones. And one of the principals, who was actually from one of the schools down here, he said, as families have stopped going to church, families have lost sight of their values. And so it's now falling on the schools to instill values into children. So now they have to do education, and they have to do this. Now they have to teach children values. So I often will say to teenagers, what are your values? And they pretty much can't tell me. Skateboarding is usually one. Surfing. So make sure you're clear about your values with your children. Write them somewhere. Put them on a blackboard in your kitchen. Formulate them. Sit around the table and go, what's important to the Herselmans? What's important to us? And you're probably going to come with things like respect, integrity, accountability, love, generosity, honesty. And you're going to come up with those things. And we need to keep drip feeding these into our children through our conversations, through our interactions, through our example, and then encourage them that those exact values that they live from go into the online space with them. And they need to be the same person online and offline. And for me, this has been really helpful with my children. Knowing who they are, knowing what their values are, and that is the person that they need to be online and offline. And then to fight for connection with our children. Stay connected to your kids. It's easier when they're little. It gets harder as they grow and they want to spend more time. We were saying they want to spend more time in their bedroom by themselves. Very normal teenage behavior. They're growing, they're maturing, they want to spend more time by themselves. But you don't really want them in their bedroom, closed door, on the phone, without you for long periods of time. But stay connected to them. So use meal times, at least one meal a day around the table. It can be McDonald's, guys. What's on the table is not that important. Of course, nutrition is important. But don't put that pressure on yourself. If you're sitting together around the table at McDonald's because you are a single working mom and you're exhausted and you don't have time to make three meats and a veg, three veg and a meat, or whatever you call it. Yeah, we South Africans, right? Three meats and a veg. And the veg is chicken. But do that for your kids. The car, the table, bedtime. These are the three opportunities in the day that we have to connect with our children, and then on an ongoing basis. And make sure that we're not so busy that we don't have time for our kids. Because I don't know about you, but my kids never come home and go, Mom, pour yourself a cup of tea. I want to debrief my day with you. It happens when there's space. And there's time for connection. It happens when they're sitting at the kitchen counter and I'm cooking, or we're shooting basketball hoops in the garden. Make space and time for connection, and fight for that connection. Even when you're putting down boundaries, when you're disagreeing and things get heated, make sure that you keep that connection. Don't swap connection for being right. And of course, we do want to put values and boundaries and stuff, but just make sure that you stay deeply connected to your children. And then I'm just going to end with a story about this because it kind of illustrated to me that this is so true. So my daughter is in grade 10. She started at a new school this year. We moved her from a kind of more traditional school. She wanted to do dance and drama for her matric subjects. So we moved her to a new school. And moving in grade 10 is hard. Any high school move, I think, is hard. And it's really hard. But she's a surfer. And she knew one girl at this new school, but then she had Instagram relationships with a couple of the other girl surfers and other girls who go to this school. So through Instagram, she reached out to these girls. They started chatting, getting to know each other a bit. She developed little friendships with them. The day before school, they met for a lunch. And so when she went into school, she had this group of friends already. So there we see a great use of social media where it can be of such benefit to our children. But then, you know, she went through the first term and it was great. But it is a school that a lot of those girls have been together since grade one. So she did feel kind of a little bit on the outside, kind of got her groove by the end of the term. And then it was holidays and she spent a lot of time surfing with her other friends and with some of her primary school age friends and didn't see those girls for the holidays. My sister came from overseas with her daughter who's 20, who's studying music in London. They live in Mauritius, but the big girl lives in London. The little one is 16, lives in Mauritius. And they came and we spent time together. And then it was the night before school started. And it was the last night that my sister was with us. And we were all sitting around the table and we were laughing and we were chatting. And then I realized that Emily wasn't there. So I went to look for her and I found her in her bedroom on her phone crying. And so I said to her, "What's going on?" She said, "Well, I asked a question on our friend group chat, and no one answered me." And now she's going, "I don't think these girls like me. I don't want to go to school tomorrow. I feel like an outsider." And she was just getting all of these insecurities from a question that was literally, "Did so-and-so have their hair cut?" And but she felt rejected. She felt left out and she felt all of these feelings. And I didn't have a very compassionate parenting moment. What I said is, "You dry your tears, you get outside because your cousins are leaving tomorrow." And so she did, and she came and sat at the table and she was quiet for a while. But then her big cousin, who's 20, she said, "Lily," which is what they call her, she goes, "What's wrong?" And so Emily explained the situation, and then her cousin her big cousin who's older than her was able to say, "Oh, you know what? Girls are just mean. I'm 20. I still have mean girls around me. And sometimes girls don't even mean to be mean. And it's just how girls are." And she just, and then her other cousin piped up and said, "Yo, I had some time when I just didn't feel like my friend group accepted me and it was really hard." And she started talking about it. And then it was so cute. Her little brother says, "Yo, in the first term, all of our friends were playing cricket. We were playing basketball. They went on tour, came back, and we had nothing to talk about. And they were all talking about cricket, and we felt so left out." And this little conversation was happening, and I wasn't even doing much. I was just sitting there. But I saw Emily change before my eyes. I saw her go from feeling rejected, feeling alone, feeling like she can't face school tomorrow because of something that happened on social media, to courage building in her, to her identity of who she is and how important she is. And I mean, her big cousin was going, "That's on them. That's not on you. You're amazing. Like, if they're being mean, that's on them." And so suddenly she was like, "Oh, this is who I am. This is who I am. These people love me unconditionally. I've got some challenges at school tomorrow, but now I've got the courage to face the next day." Went to school, had the best day, having the most wonderful time. But it's just a thing of like how social media can become so big in our children's lives, can have huge effects on them. But when we bring them back, when we root them at home, when we speak life over them, when we remind them of who they are, they can navigate their world in a much more powerful way. So my encouragement is stay connected, stay involved, speak life, speak values, journey this with your children, with being the parents, being the one responsible for the device, but knowing that this did not take God by surprise. You didn't go like, "Oh my gosh, the iPhone. Didn't see that coming." No. You were born here, you were born now, you were born with these children, and you've been promised thriving. So just embrace it, put down the boundaries, journey with your family, have grace for one another, beware of the digital drift. You know, sometimes we start with good intentions, we end up over there, and we kind of have to do these digital audits every now and again. But just keep going, because there's so much we can do to raise our children to be really capable, wise, loving, kind digital citizens. So thank you so much. Travel safe home.